Coming up on today's episode of the Locked On Bucks podcast, we continue our crossover series with the NFC North Division, joined by Luke Braun of Locked On Vikings. But first, Tom Brady may have left New England in a big way because of a rift with offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels.
You are Locked On Buccaneers, your daily Tampa Bay Buccaneers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up and welcome back to the Locked On Bucks podcast. I'm James Yarko, joined as always by David Harrison. You can find everything that we're doing over at BucksNation.com and make sure you follow along on Twitter at Locked On Bucks, at Jarko underscore Bucks, at DH82 underscore Bucks, and at Bucks underscore Nation. Of course, today's episode is brought to you in part by Built Bar. Head to BuiltBar.com and use promo code Locked On to save $10 off your first purchase. Your Tampa Bay Buccaneers lead story comes to you courtesy of Gary Myers, a New York Times bestselling author. He wrote Brady versus Manning, the rivalry that changed the NFL. He is an ex-NFL columnist of the Dallas Morning News, the New York Daily News, and a Hall of Fame voter. And Gary Myers is reporting that one of the reasons why Tom Brady wanted out of New England was a rift with offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels. Gary Myers said in a Twitter thread, quote, "Hard to present an order of why Tom Brady didn't want to return to Patriots. But one thing has been very much overlooked, according to an excellent source: his deteriorating relationship with offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels. Tom was worn out by Josh after all these years. That surprised me." Gary would continue, quote, "They made it seem like they were brothers fighting after sideline blowups. Worse than that, Brady also wanted more input into the game plan. Also, he knew it was the final season in New England and said when he didn't trust wide receivers, didn't throw to them, it's a bad look. The Pats lacked reliable wide receivers other than Edelman. So, in my opinion, here's why Brady is not in New England in no particular order. Was worn out by Belichick not having fun in New England. Create competition with Bill Belichick to see who could win a Super Bowl without the other first. Tired of Josh McDaniels. Wanted more money and more than a one-year deal. Talent around him diminished and warm weather."
Yeah, interesting stuff there and insight, at least reportedly insight, into more of the reasons that Tom Brady left New England. And, you know, we talked about his departure a lot, obviously, leading into the offseason, and then his arrival with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and some of the things that he was looking for. And really, I mean, it's not just, you know, exclusive to the National Football League, but I think in any type of a work environment, you have a situation where people want to move up. People want to move up, whether it's terms of salary or it's terms of title or it's terms of contribution. For the most part, if you have a personality of a person or in a person who wants to contribute to the organization and wants to help the organization become one of the best in whatever business they're in, you know, that person is eventually going to want to have some sort of say or some sort of leadership role. And in the National Football League, in football, you know, if you're the quarterback of a football team, you're the quarterback. There's no such thing as getting promoted to head coach. Like, if you retire and you want to become a coach and you're going to start at the bottom rung again, you're going to work yourself up. At least that's how it usually works. So as a quarterback or a football player, that moving up is kind of, you know, symbolic. In the more you play, the more success you have, the more knowledge you gain from executing the game at a successful rate, especially at a legendary rate, the way that Tom Brady has, that promotion is going to come in the form of having more influence and having more say within the organization. And really what it looks like is the more successful Tom Brady was with the New England Patriots, the more they just kind of folded back on Tom and said, "Hey, take on even more, but you're still a player. You stay in the locker room. Let us do our thing in the meeting rooms and the conference rooms as the coaches and everything else. You just execute what we tell you to." And I mean, that's not going to work for most quarterbacks in the National Football League. You know, I don't care if you're just an average quarterback, you're going to want some sort of say, or you're going to go seek out the ability to have some sort of input into what's going on the field. But when you're a legend, when you're the GOAT, when everybody around you and everybody around your organization is talking about how you're the greatest of all time, you're definitely going to want that. And, you know, not Josh McDaniels isn't a kid by any means, but when you look at who's got the better pedigree here in the National Football League, is it Josh McDaniels, a guy who went to Denver and very quickly fell out of favor not just with the fan base, but with the team itself, and was quickly shipped back to New England and then agreed in terms with the Indianapolis Colts. And then, you know, if the Colts haven't had or fallen victim, if that organization hasn't already fallen victim to overnight moves, you know, they got victimized once again by this guy. It's just kind of more of the same, to be honest with you. It doesn't really surprise. I mean, so I hesitate a little bit to dive completely into it because I don't know Josh on a personal level, but I just, you know, you have gut feelings about certain people, and this honestly isn't that big of a surprise because it kind of seems like this might be a situation where Josh is saying, I'm the coach, I'm above you, you're the player, you do what I say, even though you're the greatest player to ever do it of all time. It's more me than it is you, and that's, again, that's been the undertone of this whole thing, is Tom Brady's out to prove that he can do it without Coach Belichick, and apparently Coach McDaniels, and Coach Belichick and definitely Coach McDaniels are out to prove they can do it without Tom. So that this whole thing kind of supports that type of theme. But I think for Tom, it's a little bit less about proving them wrong and more about ending his career in a way that he wants to end it, and that is with an organization that respects him, appreciates him, and listens to him.
Yeah, it also lends credence to the reports that we got during kind of the lead up to free agency that that Tom Brady wanted to work with a head coach that would collaborate with him and that he would have input into the offensive game plan and the play calls. And if what this report is saying is true, you know, Josh McDaniels was very much, you know, we're going to do it this way and you're going to be able to make it happen with these receivers. And that's not what Tom was about anymore. And that's why people like Jeff Darlington kept pointing to the Buccaneers as a likely destination or a place that should be talked about when it came to where Tom Brady would play next, is because of the collaborative effort that Bruce Arians has with all of his quarterbacks. That's not something that Brady got to take part in. You have personalities like Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels. You know, they're going to run things the way they want to run things. And Josh McDaniels is so fickle to begin with. You know, we already know his story. He goes to be the head coach of Denver. He gets fired. He goes back to New England. He commits to coach the Indianapolis Colts. You know, it's already announced. And then he backs out at the 11th hour and runs with his tail tucked back to Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft. So, you know, it makes sense that these were the kind of the rumors heading into free agency season that Tom wanted to have a bigger role and he wanted to collaborate on the game plan and he wanted, you know, more input from his side. If indeed, you know, that wasn't something that he was getting in New England, that to be quite honest is as well run as the New England Patriots have been over the last two decades. It's something that Tom Brady earned. He should have had more input. He should have been able to say, look, the weapons around me aren't that good anymore. And this is what we need to do if we're going to succeed. And apparently Josh McDaniels just wasn't having any of it.
Yeah, interesting stuff coming out there in that article and from that source, whoever that is, of course, surrounding the departure of Tom Brady from the New England Patriots and subsequent arrival to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But more interesting stuff coming up here on the Locked On Bucs podcast as we are joined by Lucas Braun, the host of the Locked On Minnesota Vikings podcast. But before we do that, of course, we have to talk to you about our show sponsor, and that is Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar you are ever going to try. If you've been listening to our episodes this month of May, then you've also been hearing my rankings of the bars. Today, after my morning workout, I tried the coconut chocolate cream. And James, I know you're generally not a fan of coconut, but I got to tell you, that coconut chocolate cream bar definitely made its way into the top half of the current set of bars that I've tried. I've still got about four flavors that I have yet to try before I solidify my rankings. And guys, you guys need to participate in this as well. You guys need to take advantage of this right now. Our listeners can go to builtbar.com, use the promo code locked on, that's LOCKEDON, and get $10 off of your first box of Built Bars. I recommend the mix box. You get a little bit of every flavor they have to offer. And then once you narrow down your favorites like James did, you can order yourself your customized box where you get 18 bars split between three flavors, 6 bar of each. Not only are these bars extremely tasty, but they're also very healthy for you. Let me give you an example. Mint Brownie, which is in my top three, has 15 grams of protein, 110 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 5 grams of net carbs. And guys, it tastes like a candy bar. It is easily the best protein bar I've ever had in my life. We've already had one listener to this show and Twitter follower hit us up on social media, talk about how he ordered bars and hopefully he's gotten that package and he's enjoying those bars as he's listening to this episode. But guys, not just that, I've got a friend who's a drill sergeant in Missouri And he's been hitting me up on social media, asking me about my flavors because he's interested in ordering them. My mother-in-law, she got her first box in the mail. And what she's done is kind of interesting. She's cutting the bars into thirds and she's eating each flavor, one straight out of the pantry, one out of the fridge, and one third out of the freezer to figure out which flavors she likes at which temperatures and which textures. Very extra research. It's very impressive. But every single day I'm getting updates from her on the bar that she tried, what she thinks of it. Like she's kind of grading them for me. It's a lot of fun. And it's great to know she's enjoying the product that we were able to provide her that discount to get that product. So guys, again, if you want to join in on all the fun, then go to builtbar.com. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off of your first box of Built Bars. Day two of our crossover week with the NFC North, and we're talking to Lucas Braun, host of the Locked On Minnesota Vikings podcast. Lucas, it's going to be a theme this week, apparently, because we started off with a little bit of a rip the Band-Aid off question yesterday, talking about the Bears. Let's do the same here. And we're going to start with Stephon Diggs because, well, he's Stephon Diggs, and he was okay. The biggest, you know, general NFL watching news story surrounding the Minnesota Vikings this offseason. Now, on the peripheral, you know, we were hearing about and reading about issues in Minnesota between the team and what I would argue is their best fifth-round draft pick ever throughout the 2019 season. So did you see an offseason move coming, and what were your thoughts about the trade, and who did the Buffalo Bills get when they acquired this player?
That's really fun with the best fifth-round pick ever. I wonder if there's a random Hall of Famer from the 70s that was a fifth-rounder that contends with that, but that's fun. So here's the story of Stephon Diggs. So he was, I think, a little bit frustrated going all the way back to 2018 with Kirk Cousins, and the really big on-field issue is that he would get open, and sometimes he wouldn't be in the main progression. He would be open on a backside alert or something, but he would win on his route. And Kirk Cousins would never look that way because he wasn't part of the main progression of the play. And that's, you know, that's normally the Bucs do that with Godwin and Evans sometimes too. So he would be really frustrated because he was like, I was open. Why didn't you look my way? And he would get really, really mad. And he kind of did have a point too, because sometimes the play would be a sack and Diggs would have gotten a touchdown if he had just looked to the other side of the field. So this is a fairly common knock on Kirk Cousins that frustrated Diggs quite a bit. And that came to a head after a loss in Chicago in September of last year. That was the thing where suddenly trade rumors started to flare up and he missed a practice and he got this big fine. And this was this whole blowout. I think everybody got together. They had a big powwow and they must have figured a way to play together, because the Vikings then rip off four wins. And at the end of that streak, Kirk Cousins is getting MVP buzz. He had this unbelievable streak and it looked like they had figured something out. Things were relatively quiet for the rest of the season. But I still think that Diggs was in his heart kind of unsatisfied with Cousins as his quarterback. So then when free agency rolls around and the Vikings extend Kirk Cousins and add 2 years of functionally guaranteed quarterback play to his contract, that's when Diggs tweets he basically says, all right, I'm not doing this for two more years. I could have held out for one and then we could do something else, but I'm not doing this for two more years. And he tweets out, it's time for a new beginning, ... And that tweet was then seen by the Bills and I think a couple other teams who smelled blood in the water, and then they started bidding. And by the end of it, the Bills were offering the Vikings a first rounder and three more picks on top of it for Stephon Diggs. And that's kind of how the deal got done. At a certain point, Rick Spielman went, all right, I can't turn that down. That's too much. So that's kind of how it went. And I think the thing that I've been telling everybody as they've been asking me during this whole crossover thing, is if they don't extend Kirk Cousins, Stephon Diggs is still a Viking. I firmly believe that.
Yeah, meanwhile, Bill O'Brien is trying to figure out how the Vikings got so much out of a number one receiver in a trade. But
it's unbelievable because that happened later that afternoon too. So a lot of people are going, wait, no, why didn't we just trade him to the Texans and get DeAndre Hopkins? That would have been much better.
Right. Well, and a couple of other notable departures from the team. The Vikings have seen a lot of players in the secondary leave, but most notably, corners Xavier Rhodes and Trey Waynes. Now, Rhodes, kind of the story around him is that he started to fall off a little bit as he's gotten a little bit older. But Waynes is still a younger guy, and he struggled a little bit early in his career. But did this become a situation with him where the Vikings just didn't see a future with Trey Waynes? Because he got a boatload of money from the Cincinnati Bengals, 3 years, $42 million. What is it that the Bengals are missing on Trey Waynes when they're giving him this massive contract, you know, that the Vikings know they can't get out of him? Or is it just a matter of the Vikings weren't able to keep him in house.
Yeah, I think it was what you just said there. With Rhodes, it was his level of play wasn't up to his contract. It was unlikely to, even if he bounced back, which I think he did. I went on Locked On Colts when that happened, when they signed Rhodes and kind of talked about him. But his problems in short were a lot more mental than physical. And I think, you know, if you saw him execute the right technique and like make the right decision about whether or not the receiver was going to go deep, and when he didn't misread the play, he could go step for step with people. It wasn't like he was just getting blown by, even though he turned his hips at the right time and stuff. But he was guessing a lot and getting himself out of position. He was super undisciplined with his feet. And I think all of that could turn around if you get into a better mental place. Fresh start's really good for that. But I don't think the Vikings wanted to do that at the price tag. I think they were going to owe him like $8 or $10 million, or maybe even $13 million or something like that. So they just kind of cut ties and said, you know, all right, good luck elsewhere. With Waynes, I'm pretty sure they had an offer on the table and the Bengals just beat it. And they just kind of lost their own bidding war for Trey Waynes. And for him, I think the Vikings correctly identify him as a very good CB2. I don't think you want to put him at CB1. You know, I don't want to put him up against the Mike Evans and the Michael Thomases of the world. But if you put him at CB2, for the most part, he'll be good. And he's actually really good at countering like deep burners, guys like Marquise Brown, which is really, really good for Cincinnati. So make no mistake, the Vikings wanted Trey Waynes back and they got outbid.
To be honest, Luke, the Vikings defense once was, you know, probably one of the best in the National Football League, to be honest with you. Now, to me, looks like it's pretty much a shell of what they used to be. Would you agree with that sentiment? And if not, please educate me on what I'm not seeing, because it seems like they've definitely fallen off a peg or two. Because if I see it that way, then I guarantee you some of our listeners do. So if we got it wrong, I'd love to know why.
Yeah, it depends on what you mean by like shell of its former self, right? I would be hard pressed to call it a below average defense. I still think that they're an above average defense. I would say you could make the argument they're no longer in the top 10, which is a decent regression. But like, you still have guys like Daniil Hunter. You still have guys like Anthony Barr. You still have two elite safeties right now in Anthony Harris and Harrison Smith. Though Harris is actually playing on Vikings in 2020 is still kind of up in the air. There's still lots of trade talks that have been kind of ebbing and flowing before, after, and during the draft and all that. But I mean, I guess now that the draft is passed, it's a little more likely, but you still have a really good like back end there. You have a huge question mark at the cornerback position because you lost all that talent and you're replacing them with rookies ostensibly, right? You have Jeff Gladney. He's a rookie. You have Cameron Dantzler. He's a rookie. He's going to compete with Holton Hill. And I still think that that group needs like a good veteran, you know, old guy presence, like what Terrence Newman was a few years ago for the Vikings. But you still have plenty of talent all around. You had the same guys together on that defense, though, for like 6 years. So, yeah, it's going to regress when like half of those guys leave. But with Mike Zimmer at the helm, he's a problem solver, and he's somebody that's changed the face of that defense and changed the scheme of that defense several times in his tenure here. When he came to Minnesota, the Vikings were a cover three team, and then cover three got figured out by everybody because everybody copied the Seahawks. And that meant offenses were facing the same scheme every time, and so Zimmer had to adapt. He became a cover four team. Then Sean McVay figured that out and crushed him on Thursday Night Football, and he changed it, and he got smoked by RPOs in the NFC Championship a couple years ago, and he changed it. So I think schematically they'll be able to figure out what they can do with the new personnel, but it would be unreasonable to expect it to be as good as it's been in years like 2017, where it was just suffocating. But I don't think it's going to be so bad as to be a weakness of the team. It's just maybe as Vikings fans, we might be a little spoiled and we're going to be in for a rude awakening when we have like the 12th best defense instead of the fourth best defense. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And of course, yeah, defense is definitely something that's going to be needed in that division. But moving on, you know, it's been a little doom and gloom for the Vikings to start this crossover off. So let's transition to something a little more uplifting and a little more exciting. And let's talk about basically replacing Stephon Diggs with an absolute stud in Justin Jefferson in the first round of the 2020 NFL draft. What does getting a guy who would likely be considered the top wideout in a lot of other draft classes mean for the future of this team and this offense?
Yeah, it's really good. It would be unreasonable to expect Justin Jefferson to just come in and replace the production of Stephon Diggs. He'll probably replace the snap counts of Stephon Diggs and like take those snaps because there's nobody else really on the roster. There's Tajay Sharpe. He was wide receiver 4 in Tennessee. And there's like BC Johnson, who was the wide receiver 3 last year, 7th round rookie last year. So those guys aren't going to like beat out Justin Jefferson for his job unless Jefferson's a really big bust. But So you'll have, he's going to be the second guy next to Thielen. The weirdness with him is that he played mostly in the slot at LSU. I actually have earlier on my episode today that came out today on my show, I actually had Mark Schofield on to talk about why he's not just a slot, but he's probably better in the slot. And the same thing goes for Thielen. So you're going to have a lot of slot stuff going on and a lot of like trying to manipulate everybody's Perry Nickerson and everybody's, you know, random Nickel Roby Coleman's and kind of trying to work away from people's, you know, like to go way old for you guys, like people's Rondé Barbers and try to like, you know, work around that. But here's the thing about Justin Jefferson. He's just good at football. Like that's, it's very simple with him. You know, he's got maybe a little thing of releasing against press and you could probably nitpick some things and that's why he wasn't, you know, in the same tiers like Jerry Jeudy. But he is coming out of the box immediately ready to play and play well. And that's exactly what the Vikings needed because they needed somebody to come in and contribute immediately. And he's really good at football. He's fast. He can run around. He can catch. He has an amazing catch radius. He can do contested catches. He's just like good at the sport. And it's hard to not get excited about that when somebody just is very simply good.
Yeah. Bucks fans are definitely very high on Justin Jefferson entering the draft, even though wide receiver, not a day one, you know, need for the Bucks anyway. But another first round draft pick there for the Vikings, Jeff Gladney, the cornerback, you know, coming in like we've already kind of talked about a little bit of a, I don't want to say depleted, but a reduced cornerback room secondary. How comfortable are you that he can come in and slide in as a starter in year one and run effectively with the likes of Mike Evans and Chris Godwin?
Yeah, I actually think he makes a better outside option than Mike Hughes. I believe they're both the same height, and you might not think about that, you know, looking at Jeff Gladney. He's like 5'10", but he plays like he's about 6'3". He's a really good contested catch guy. There's all kinds of great highlights of him going up against, you know, the top contested guys like Denzel Mims and, you know, big, I think there's a 6'6" guy he played in another game, and being able to match up and like win box outs and win jump balls against those guys. So I'm not too worried about the big box out thing. Now, of course, he's going to be a rookie. He kind of gets caught out of phase sometimes. He gets caught, you know, with bad feet or in a bad alignment, and he has to recover. He has unbelievable recovery speed. So you have to be able to take advantage of a really quick window. Tom Brady can probably do that. And it's probably going to be something that when we talk, I say, okay, here's how the Bucks, this is the blueprint for the Bucks winning the game, is to take advantage of that little window. But for a rookie, he's probably going to exceed what you usually get out of a rookie corner. He's going to come in and start right away because, like you said, you know, the position has been picked clean. So there's not a lot of competition to like start ahead of him. But he's should be, I feel really good about him coming in and starting, in general and outperforming what you would usually expect from a rookie. That doesn't mean there won't be hiccups. And I do think that you're probably going to give up a decent amount of production compared to what we're used to with Zimmer defenses this year, just because you don't have the corners, but you also have a lot of safety help from Harrison Smith and Anthony Harris. And I think you can probably work that puzzle out to get something that's serviceable and can allow your offense to, you know, keep up.
We are joined by Locked On Vikings host Luke Braun as we continue our crossover series with the NFC North. We've covered, you know, what the Vikings have done in the first round, and something that we've asked a couple of other you know, Locked On hosts is, you know, let's move past the first round. And the Vikings had like 600 draft picks, so I'm not going to go
NFL record.
Yeah, I'm not going to go down the list of everybody that they took. They took a couple of corners, a couple of defensive linemen, an offensive tackle. Who is, when you take a look at their draft haul, excluding Jefferson and Gladney, who is personally your favorite player that they drafted as far as what he can bring and how he will fit with the Minnesota Vikings that a lot of our listeners may not have even heard about before?
Yeah, so your listeners probably heard about Ezra Cleveland because you guys were in the tackle market, but I think, I mean, he's the second rounder, right? So that's kind of cheating. In terms of day three guys, I'm going to go with James Lynch. He's a defensive lineman out of Baylor. He played a lot of edge at Baylor in like a 3-4, kind of a 5 technique capacity. And he'll probably play 4-3-3 technique in Minnesota. But he was really, really productive at Baylor. He's a very good athlete. He is a leader. He was a captain. He's one of these like head on straight, high character type guys, you know, big work ethic kind of guy. And the Vikings actually have a low key hole at three technique right now. Their penciled in starter is Shamar Stephen, who had just a dreadful season in 2019. He wasn't productive. He didn't suck up double teams. He was just like a kind of a waste of an 11-man starting spot. And so I think that there's an opening for James Lynch as a fourth-round pick to come in and actually win a starting job. I'm really, really excited about him. And yeah, the other guy's Ezra Cleveland. He'll probably start at left tackle or left guard. It kind of depends. I think the Vikings haven't made that decision yet and want to work with him a little bit to make that choice, because Riley Reiff can play either one in their eyes. They've asked Riley Reiff to move into left guard a couple of times, and then it didn't end up working out that they needed to or whatever, but they know that he can and is willing to. So those two guys are going to be on the left. So you're going to a decent chance you get like 4 or 5 starting rookies day one here on the Vikings. It's going to be a very young squad.
Yeah, and I'm going to cut in front of David here, and I'm going to ask one more question before I let him wrap it up. Go back to draft night, you know, round one. It's kind of a new experience. We're doing this whole virtual draft thing, and we're all kind of laughing about how Ian Rappaport had said, you know, there was a report out that, you know, these scouts are saying that mock drafts have never been more wrong, when in fact, I don't think they've ever been more accurate. Until it was time for the Packers to pick, and they decide it's a good idea to trade up for Jordan Love instead of helping Aaron Rodgers in any conceivable way, like, I don't know, a wide receiver that they desperately need. So I have kind of a two-part question for you here. How hard did you laugh? And is there now kind of a little hope among the Vikings fan base that Aaron Rodgers goes full blown follow in Favre's footsteps and he joins the Minnesota Vikings here in just a couple of years?
Okay, so there are plenty of Photoshops of Rodgers in a Vikings jersey that people have jokingly posted, and I'm here for that. That is a great meme, and I'm here for it. But here's the thing. Vikings fans were laughing really hard at the Jordan Love thing, and I get it. And I definitely, if I were a Packers fan, I would be probably as upset as they all are. I know Peter Bukowski's kind of talked himself into it, but like, yeah, I think the idea behind it is really difficult to justify, because in the best case scenario, which is Jordan Love works out and you don't need Aaron Rodgers anymore, you don't actually get to find that out, because you're married to Rodgers with his contract for like 3 years. And by the time you're actually making a decision between the two quarterbacks, you're also making the fifth year option decision with Jordan Love. So I think that the way that this all times out, it's really difficult for it to be efficient. Now, if Jordan Love turns out and he's the next Mahomes, then the efficiency of it kind of doesn't matter, and you got your next quarterback. And that's why I'm holding off on my laughter a little bit, because I learned my lesson with Aaron Rodgers. You know, I remember being a kid in 2005 when they selected Rodgers and going, they have Favre. Why would they ever do that in the first round? Like, it's the exact same thing. So I've learned my lesson. I'm going to maybe dial back the hubris a little bit, but it's really difficult to see this. You know, they're not going to get good quarterback on a rookie contract, like what the Chiefs have with Mahomes, with the way that, you know, the Eagles went so far with Wentz and, you know, won the Super Bowl that year with him on a rookie contract and all that. You don't have that beautiful at the Rams and Goff. You don't have that asset. And that is, I think, the biggest critique of this. Plus, Jordan Love is a really, really raw, unripe, unready to play quarterback that's going to take 2 years of like fostering and real attention, where you'll have to roster a third one to be the backup because he won't be ready to play. He's going to have to wait in the wings. And even after all that work and all that dedication, it still might not work out. So I would be pretty upset if I were a Packers fan. Plus, they picked two fullbacks in the next two rounds, so that's not exactly great either. and that draft really, really baffles me. But if their gamble pays off, we're all going to look like a bunch of idiots, because the efficiency of could they do the contracts quite perfectly is not going to matter if the Packers have another franchise quarterback for 15 years. And I think that's what they think that they're getting.
Yeah, and we've got Peter coming on the show tomorrow. Wednesday is going to be our Locked On Packers crossover. But before we get to that, Luke, last question for you on this episode. Where do you see the Vikings stacking up in the NFC North for 2020?
I actually think the NFC North is not as strong a division as people have kind of touted it to be. I think they're kind of saying, oh, you know, you got all these, the Bears still have a defense, and you got Aaron Rodgers on one hand, and then you got, you know, the Vikings made the playoffs too, and maybe Matt Stafford, this is their year. No, and I think they're all looking to be decent teams. I think they were all decent teams last year. I think both the Vikings and Packers overachieved, and I think they're due for a regression. I think the Bears are in a really bad way right now, and I think the Lions are just kind of treading water this offseason. So I think the Vikings will be in the thick of the NFC North hunt. I wouldn't have them as favorites. I'd probably put them second place behind Green Bay right now because there are parts of their offseason that have gone really bad, and I think there are things that can regress, and I could see them being, you know, a kind of 8-9 win team and it coming down to tiebreakers, which is a pretty like lukewarm, like really weeny way to put it. But I think that they stack up as contenders for the NFC North. But I don't think right now, and then part of this is I don't have the highest opinion of Kirk Cousins. I don't think that they're Super Bowl contenders.
All right. Well, Luke, thank you very much for your time. Let all of our listeners know where they can find all of your Minnesota Vikings coverage.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Luke Braun NFL. The show is at Locked On Vikings. You can find me writing the occasional article at zonecoverage.com. And of course, you can find my show anywhere you find this one.
All right. Well, Luke, thank you again very much. And best of luck to your Vikings this year until about, I don't know, say week 14.
Yeah, good luck on all the other ones, especially the ones against all the other NFC North teams.
Yeah, well, and if you could take care of the NFC South, we'd appreciate it.
Hey, that's what we did last year.
All right. Coming up tomorrow, we will be hearing from the Locked On Packers show, but for today's episode, that is going to do it. So please check out everything David and I are doing over at BucksNation.com. Make sure you're following along on Twitter at LockedOnBucks, at JRCO_Bucks, at DH82_Bucks, and at Bucks_Nation. Make sure you're heading over to BuiltBar.com using promo code LockedOn to save $10 off that first box. Hope you all have an absolutely outstanding day. Stay safe. Stay healthy, wash your hands, and we thank you so much for joining us right here at Locked On Bucks.